Welcome to Frank on Target, your gateway to the world of politics, controversy, and the great outdoors. Join us as we dive into the heart of today's most pressing issues, explore the latest headlines, and uncover the wonders of nature, all under the enlightened guidance of our host, Frank Santarella.
This is Frank on Target, and we're on WVFF Radio. That's Red Brick Patriot Radio, 97.7 FM. I'm sitting here with Airgun Angie, and we're just on the cusp of the deer season opening here in South Carolina. And I want to talk to Angie a little bit about what she's anticipating doing for the deer season, because we're a couple weeks out. Today, I believe, what's today's date? Today is the 1st, and Bucks Only opens on the 15th, so...
Yep.
How you doing, Angie?
I'm doing well. How are you, Frank?
I'm doing good. What are you going to be doing this season?
Well, I've already started putting corn out. I was putting shell corn because that's all I could get, but now they're selling cob corn, so that's going out now because I think deer like that better. It's been my experience. I put shell corn out, and the guy next to me put cob corn out, and I lost all my deer, so...
Well, the cob corn, I find is more manageable. I put my corn out every day, all right? So it's easier for me to manage. One thing about cob corn, I put cob corn out there, and if I'm watching the corn pile, I see little corn cobs bouncing away.
Yes.
You know, somebody's picking them up and taking them in the woods with them. And
yeah.
I can't say it's a bouncing corn cob, but... I know there's some critter attached to that that's going to have a nice dinner.
Oh, yeah. I went out, was it last year or the year before, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh, I don't have much corn left on my pile. There might be 6 or 8 cobs. This little squirrel comes in there. 6, 5, 4, 3. Stop! That's not for you!
Oh, slingshot this year.
Oh, that's a good idea.
No. Listen, people, and again, hey, we both live in the country, and you know, you should have your dogs contained, but we know folks let their dogs out, and dogs are friendly, and they'll let them out and run around. Oh man, I don't want them running through my corn pile when I'm out there deer hunting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I had a hound come through. He was a once a weeker, man. He'd be coming through once a week, whether I wanted him to or not. And, I mean, you know, like everybody else that's still hunting, you can set your clock or set your watch by the deer coming through sometimes. And I'm looking and I'm like, where the hell are they, you know, and this and that. And I hear a little noise off to the side and damn, that damn hound is here again, you know. And he doesn't run deer. He won't run them. But they won't come into the corn when he's out there messing around. So he's going to get a little slingshot in the butt this year. You know, we got these little clay balls. You know that they blow up. You know, so
just give them a little sting.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I'm going to tell you, I hunt with my dog. I leave my dog in the truck. And she has a good old time, and she'll stick her nose out the window and this and that and watch what the world is going on out there. But she doesn't disturb nothing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This guy is walking around on the hoof, you know what I mean? Yeah, he's hunting.
I have a little bit mixed feelings about that. I actually just posted a video on my Airgun Angie Facebook page about what are people's thoughts when it comes to dogs. I mean, they obviously don't read no trespassing signs. They don't know, but... We're in a place where people have deer dogs. And guess what? I have deer dogs, and we've actually had them escape out of the kennel while we're trying to feed them or clean the kennel, escape out the kennel and go. And they don't have their tracking device on. They don't have. They just have the regular collar on at that time. And what do? We do our best to catch it, but we don't always catch them. And so we've had, like, I was out one morning sitting in my stand, and all of a sudden I hear, arr! And I was like, that sounds like my dog. And my daughter had actually let 2 of our dogs get out. They were coming straight to my corn pile and ran the deer off. And I mean, so I kind of have a mixed feeling. I understand accidents happen. I understand things happen. The same thing could happen or with a regular yard dog or house dog. They get out the fence or they run off. The same thing can happen with any of those. So it's frustrating at times, but I have actually had times where it benefited me. It seems like there's always dogs in the wood across the road from my stand over there running in the evening times. I was wondering if there wasn't a group of guys just turning dogs loose in that block. But they actually one evening stirred the deer up and the deer came in early.
Oh, so, that's a good thing.
Yes. So there's benefits to it sometimes and then other times it's...
Yeah. I mean, I got to tell you, I really would hope that people take care of their dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, deer season comes around, I see many, many dogs that either they got away from the pack,
yeah,
they got lost, somebody doesn't care enough to go look for them. I mean, every year I end up with a couple in the back of my truck, you know, taking them somewhere because unfortunately, some of them aren't in really too good a shape by the time some dog hunters give the rest of us bad names.
I will agree with that.
Yeah, and again, that's what you call it. That's hopefully it's the minority, and you know, I mean, dog hunting is real healthy down here in the Lowcountry. And listen, people have been doing it for 100 years or 200-300 years, and listen, God bless them, and that's good. But got to, you know, I mean, and anybody that has really good dogs, they have investments in those dogs and they care about them, you know? So it's folks that are just running dogs that they find out there, you know?
Yeah. So we had two sisters get out last year, and one was out for 3 days. We went morning, evening, afternoon, drove around, posted on Facebook. We could not find the dog. A lady called us one morning that she had found her. The other dog we couldn't find. My son found her on the way to church one morning. I prayed. I said, Lord, please bring them both home safely. And they were both brought home safely. But by the time we got the second one, it had been a week and she was so skinny. All I could do was cry. We care about our dogs, but there are people out there that don't. But, I mean, as long as you're doing what you can to get them back, because, I mean, stuff happens.
You run collars? Radar collars on them?
Yeah. Yeah, we've got GPS collars on them. We don't have them on them when they're in their pen.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
when we turn them loose, we put them on them. So,
yeah. Well, that's really.
So we do both.
Isn't that ironic though? It really is. A form of hunting that's been around, we've been doing down here for 300 years. Now we put GPS collars on them.
Yes.
But listen, it makes for a better hunt. It really does.
Well, it's really. I don't think it. Necessarily has everything to do with the hunter and their dog. It has everything to do with still hunters and other people who aren't hunters who are complaining about our dogs. So it allows us to better track them so that they don't get in places where people don't want them.
I got a question for you, and I've been meaning to ask somebody this. I don't see charity hunts down here in the Lowcountry. Now, you spent time in Georgia from time to time, right?
A little bit.
And they have charity hunts in Georgia where they'll actually have dogs driving and either church or the YMCA or the Masonic Lodge, right, as a fundraiser, they'll rent out stands and folks will run their dogs.
Huh. I've never heard of that.
And, they're great. They're great. It costs you probably, I don't know, $100-$150. And you're hunting with them for a day and you're renting a stand, all right? And it's a good old time, and it's an excellent fundraiser. And we might be talking about doing something like this in the future because we got a lot of fundraisers coming up for this general election, and that's a real good thing. And we're talking about doing a sporting clays thing too.
So. Yeah, that would be a good idea. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't have the money to actually join a hunting club.
Yeah,
it can be up to $2,000 a year.
Yeah, I mean, a hunt club for $1,200 is like the way that's out of. You don't find a hunting club for $1,200 no more.
No.
You know, it's a couple grand.
Yeah, ours is $1,800.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lot. So $150 to go hunt one day. I mean, and to help somebody out. It's not too bad.
No, that's a good deal.
Hopefully you'll get a deer.
So what did you do? You did you prepare your feed plot, or you're just throwing out corn?
Well, this year we actually had to turn my stand because we had, we've got people that moved in the cutdown that where I used to, my stand was pointed towards. So we actually had to turn the whole stand, which my stand is a big two-story scaffolding. It's like 6 foot by 10 foot. So it's not anything.
It's a condo.
Pretty much. But it's so that I can film. I set my filming equipment up in there, and I'll usually bring somebody with me. So there's, it's a two-man sitter, and then there's room for cameras and all that kind of stuff. So it's big. But we had to bring the chain ball in there and slowly turn it, and then cut down trees and clear bushes and stuff. But we got it all set up now. The worst part about it for me is going into the stand after I haven't been in there for so long and finding all the critters and trying to decritter it, especially spiders.
Ugh. What about, what do you call it? Now, if you turned your stand, you didn't turn it into the sun, right?
No, it's actually, it's in the woods. It's surrounded by trees.
All right, so the sun doesn't blind you anyway.
No, it's going to get darker earlier there because it's in the woods, but...
Well, I think you have that taken care of.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Listen, that's a beautiful thing. I mean, you've been shooting a digital scope. I shot a digital scope for part of the season last year, and it gets you that last 15, 20 minutes, half an hour.
Yeah.
When it's legal to hunt yet, but you're in the woods. You know, you're in the woods, and the sun goes not behind. We don't have mountains here, not behind the horizon.
The tree line.
But it goes behind the trees. You know, and now you don't see anything, so you can pick up that extra 15 minutes or half an hour, which the truth of the matter is that last 15 minutes or half an hour has been real productive for me because,
yeah.
You know, I end up saying, holy, I better get this deer out of here before it gets dark or, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. So,
well, last year my corn pile was closer to the cutdown, so I had light coming in from the cutdown. This year it's right smack in the middle of the tree line. So there's really, though the ATN scopes help give me as much light extension as possible, it's not going to be as long as it was last year. I'm sure it'll be a lot different. So kind of a bummer, but you know, the deer like their cover too, so maybe they'll come out earlier because they have more cover there, and I'll have to like sabotage your property or something.
Oh, sure.
Maybe we'll have to sabotage Wade's. He's got a nice piece right there.
That doesn't matter to me. What do you call it, Miss Angie? I got milk crates and milk crates and milk crates full of antlers. I'm out there for the hunt.
That's one thing that I wanted to bring up was, we have, like, there's this Facebook group. It's called Little Bucks and Freezer Fillers. And you'll get your people on there that are complaining about, why'd you kill that when it was too small? Well, not everybody's out there hunting antlers. A lot of people are out there, they want the meat. So I think that, look, we're all people, we're all different, we all have different goals. Stop picking on other people for having different goals than yours.
Well, a lot of people talk a good game, but when it comes to tolerance, they're kind of lacking. Like I told you, I don't shoot no does until, I don't know, I guess December 1.
But you're not going to get mad at me for shooting does, right?
No.
See?
You know why? Because I mean, I'm going to have those there no matter whether you shoot does or not.
Yes.
You know, I don't shoot no does till December, and you know, I shoot two and that's it. Put them in the freezer, and that's, if I shoot a buck or a couple of bucks earlier in the season, I mean, unless I'm giving meat away, I can only eat two deer a year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's only me and my wife, so.
Yeah, and there's plenty of people out there that want it.
Oh, not only that. Listen, I was talking to a fella that lives outside of Cottageville, and he's got a load of kids, you know, and he hunts on horseback. So you know where I'm going with this. He hunts on horseback, and he does a fine job, and he's a real conservationist. And I see some of the deer that him and his kids shoot, and he shoots some nice deer. But they have to shoot seven deer. That family has to shoot seven deer a year. That's what they need. That's what they, you know, that's what they need to get by.
Oh, my son. Oh, no. We would need a lot more than that.
Could you eat more than seven?
Oh, he went on this diet where he was eating like, I don't know, 2 pounds of meat a meal or something or a day. I don't know. It was a lot. He had calculated how many deer we're going to need to kill this year. And it's not looking good if it went the same as it did last year. I only got one. So I was like, well, you just might need to go find some friends and get that will give you some deer.
You know, it's the funny thing is December 1st comes around and I'm going to be shooting does. And it's, I wish I could walk up to them, pick them up and heft them a little bit because I'm shooting for the poundage.
Right.
You know. But
trying to weigh them with your eyeballs.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and then the problem is they herd up so tight sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
They herd up so tight. Would you get away from that other deer? I want to shoot you and not the deer behind you.
And the deer's going, I know.
And what do you call it? And and you do. And, you know, I shoot a centerfire rifle and you get pass-throughs.
Yep.
You get pass-throughs. I don't want to shoot two deer at once. I mean, yeah. Listen, if you throw a quarter up in the air, or throw two quarters up in the air, yeah, let me try and shoot two quarters at once. But no, I don't want to shoot two deer.
If there was going to be a guaranteed kill of the two deer at one time, I'd be okay with that. But if I was just going to kill one and possibly wound the other, I'm not okay with that.
No. That's...
If it was going to be a guaranteed kill, it'd have to be a big gun. If it was going to be a guarantee, I mean, not necessarily it'd have to be, but if it was a guaranteed kill, I'd do it. But I'm not about wounding them, so.
Well,
I'm with you.
You're a conservationist, right? and that's a good thing, you know.
Some people call me a killer.
a killer. Yeah. But, the people that call you a killer, unless they're a strict vegetarian, they're just content with having other people do their killing for them.
Yep. Well, that's why we're all different.
You know,
people to be different so we can have others make up a difference.
Yeah. You know, so, but I'm pretty ready. I just got a I got to start putting the corn out and.
You said you were changing rifles this year, right?
Well, I did. Yeah. I'm shooting a Thompson Center single shot. It's good. And it's so crazy. Single shot, but if I need a second shot, I keep an elastic band on my left hand. And only thing is, you got to pull the. It doesn't have ejectors; it has an extractor. So you got to actually grab the rim of the cartridge, pull it out, and then throw another one in if you need a second shot. But I don't remember taking a second shot. I don't remember when. I mean, centerfire rifles, they're pretty devastating.
Yeah.
I'm shooting a 243. There's a lot more rifle there than I need for those deer. But then on the other hand, it's a good shooting rifle. I can take the shots that I want. That I'm getting too old to chase them. You know, so I like them to fall right where I shoot them. If they go 50 yards, that's okay, because I can drive the truck 50 yards and pick them up.
If they go further than that, just call me and we'll bring a dog.
Well, hopefully I don't need the dogs, you know. Hopefully I don't need the dogs, because if I need the dogs, that means I will call you, that's for sure. But that means I screwed up.
Yeah, it happens, though. I mean, I hope you don't need the dogs either, but it is part of hunting. It is part of life.
Yep. And I got to tell you, make you laugh. I shot one in the yard, and I had to track it. And, oh, what a pain in the neck. What a pain in the neck. I got to the point now. The greatest thing around. You know, when we used to track... I grew up north, so what you would do is you'd track your blood, and then where you lost the blood, you take your glove, you put your glove down, and then, you know, make your circle, pick up your blood again, and then pick up, you know, drop another glove down, go retrieve the other one.
So you're losing just, clothes while you're finding blood.
Right. Your hands are getting cold. And then we got really, really sophisticated. We start using surveys tape. You know, the fluorescent surveys tape.
You guys got cold.
You got your hands cold. Now, I've got to tell you something crazy. The last couple of years I hunted up north, I had a GPS, a Garmin tracker, okay, which is the greatest thing in the world because it puts tracks on where you walked. So you track your deer, you pick up the blood. If you lose your blood, you start making a circle. But you mark the GPS. So you get back. I mean, you know, you're not dropping gloves. You're not leaving surveyor's tape out there. Because you leave surveyor's tape out there, then you got to go and pick up all that crap, right. You know, because you don't want to leave it out there. But the GPS was great. And that goes back to the same thing. You know, something that we're doing tracking deer is like, you know, as primitive as it gets. Running dogs is as primitive as it gets, and we're using GPS technology in both instances to make the hunt a little easier. And that's good.
Well, I mean, as much as you can do for success, why not?
Yeah, right? Yeah. No,
you got a wounded deer, and you got a GPS device that'll help you find that wounded deer. Then,
and that's the last thing we want to do. I mean, you don't want to waste the resource,
right?
You know, and that's. You know, hey, those animals were given to us for a reason, you know. And
I think it's a hunter's responsibility to do all we can if a wounded one to find it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's,
there comes a point where you've done all you can and you're not going to recover it sometimes, but it is your responsibility.
I mean, I'll tell you something funny. I was bow hunting. I was a kid. And I tagged one and I couldn't find that damn deer to save my life. I was, what do you call it? I was in the woods with a flashlight till probably about 8 o'clock. And I couldn't find that damn deer. So I was hunting on my buddy's property and he worked the second shift. He worked 3 to 11. Oh, I'm in bed sleeping, you know, he gets home from work. He says, "You shot a deer. My mother told me you shot a deer." I said, "Yeah." He said, "You find it?" I said, "No." I said, "I was out there till 8 o'clock. I said, it was dark. I said, I'll come back tomorrow." He says, "You get out here now." So I was back in the car driving out to the field. And, I was out there. I was back out there about 12:30. And we're in the dark. And, oh, man, I tell you. I had in the dark, 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning. Man, I ended up when I got done with that shirt all torn up in those briars, I threw it away. It was a mess. Well, we came back with a deer, but
oh, you did.
Oh yeah. This guy was 1/4 Rich Creek Indian, and he's a fantastic tracker. I mean, I can track, but this guy, it was like it was in his blood, you know. And he's a big guy. And you know who he looked like? Yeah, you know that actor that always plays a Native American Indian, Will Sampson, big guy. But anyway,
I don't know.
This guy, he used to scare me. I really had to tell him, "Hey, listen, don't do that." He would throw a deer over his shoulders and bring it out of the woods, you know. "Hey, listen, you know, there's still people out here with guns and you got that deer on your shoulder. I don't think you want to do that, you know." But yeah, he was a big boy.
Well, I shot one the year before last with an air gun and I was sure it was a good hit. And I haven't had the moment that I've dropped a deer on the spot with my air gun yet. I'm still hoping for it, but I've most of the time recovered them. There's been twice that I haven't. One was a doe. I shot her, and it was it got dark. Couldn't find her. There was no blood trail. Brought the dog out. The dog got on a different deer. It was a mess. We walked around and around and around for hours and couldn't find this deer. And the most devastating part of it was I found her a few days later.
It happens.
Yeah. And that was, it was a perfect heart shot. Perfect heart shot.
Really?
She wasn't, but I think 60 yards from where I shot her.
Really?
Yes. That was devastating. I was so upset. But the other one...
Was it a pass-through?
Mm-hmm. But there was no blood.
Yeah.
No blood. Yeah. The other one was a 9-point buck. The biggest buck I've ever seen in my life came in. And I don't know if I just pulled the shot because I was so nervous. But I shot. He did the hump jump. And he ran off. I hit him, but I hit him too far forward.
All right.
Because I went back and I watched the video. I tracked him. We tracked him for 2 hours that night. Went back to the house, watched the video again. I went back out there by myself, looked around for him. And I had, I was going to Texas. It was October. I was going to Texas for the entire month. And so I figured that he was off there somewhere, went off and died. And I was feeling horrible. When I got back from Texas, I checked my camera. He was on the camera again.
No shit.
Yep.
Good deal.
So he made it. He's one I'm hoping to get. Don't get him.
No. If I see a 9-pointer with a severe limp,
that's Angie's.
With a severe limp, I'll send them your way. Oh,
thank you.
My. Yeah. It's pretty amazing what they'll survive.
Mm, it is.
I've shot them. And they've had arrows in them, you know. Mm. And it was no arteries anywhere. The broadhead was in the length of the broadhead and a little bit of arrow, but the arrow was broken off. And I've shot them with.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's why I say you never know what to expect when you're hunting. Stuff happens. Some animals can carry your lead or your arrow a heck of a lot farther than others.
I think you're going to agree with me. I'd probably pass. I'd probably pass 3 or 4 shots for everyone I take. You know, with the bow, when I was shooting with the bow, I'd pass a dozen because it isn't going to work. You know, it isn't going to work. And even when it does work, you say, holy moly, I mean, what the hell did I do? I shot one with the bow walking between the trees, and there were 2 trees, and I saw him coming, and I had a hold between the 2 trees, and that's where I had my shot. And as soon as he came through, I saw him, his chest just broke the tree, let the arrow go. Went right down. He went right down because I was so concerned about slipping that arrow between the trees that I shot high and I spined them.
Mm.
So now I got a deer kicking around and I got the bow in my hand. Well, I'll shoot him again. You know, I can put a shot in. A shot that's going to bleed like a son of a gun. Well, cost me 2 arrows, 2 titanium broadheads. That what do you call it? That was if you shoot a deer with a centerfire rifle. All right, maybe a good ammunition costs you $1.50, $2 at the max. I just shot a deer. Cost me $50 in ammunition. You know, I got 2 broadheads that I'm not going to retrieve, or they're going to be messed up, and 2 arrows. So that was a nice deer, though. I mean, it was really, really nice deer. But
I don't think people bow hunt because it's economical.
No,
I think it's kind of a thrill.
No, I'm going to tell you something. I've got a pass through, picked up the arrow and used that arrow again. You know.
Yep.
But yeah, no, bow hunting. You don't bow hunt for economy. That's for sure. Shit. That's. I mean, my bow cost me what a damn good rifle and a scope will cost you. So you know that's. And then you better practice.
Yep.
You better practice and practice and practice. Yeah, it's a commitment, and you start. My season up north used to start in the end of October. And I used to start shooting, practicing Labor Day. I would shoot every day, Labor Day, until the season started.
Have you ever been to Bud's Archery Shop in Somerville?
No.
It's nice.
I can't go there. I can't go there.
I understand.
I can't go there.
Well, they have a little indoor range.
If I did, I'd go there and do two things. I'd have them tune my bow, which I haven't touched in 5 years, and buy a dozen arrows. Arrows. I mean, you know, you wonder how primitive folks were shooting arrows. Man, arrows are high tech.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I actually shot aluminums for a while. Aluminums were a lot of fun. But everybody's shooting carbon fiber, so that's what I shoot, carbon fiber. You never shot the bow, right? Or did you?
I do. I have a compound and I have a crossbow. I just got into archery last year, so I'm kind of new to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fun, though. I prefer the compound over the crossbow. Crossbow is too much like a gun. I mean, I like shooting guns, too, but it's just there's more.
I got to tell you something. Crossbows, just in the past 20 years, states have been allowing crossbows. Mm-hmm. And they originally started allowing crossbows for people with disabilities.
Yep.
Now everybody can shoot a crossbow.
Well, there are a lot of archery, like target places that won't allow crossbows in there.
And I don't blame them.
Yeah, because they tear up the targets.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can't. Those bolts are so much more difficult to stop than an arrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you buy a target today. You see them all marked crossbow rated. You know, I mean, that's craziness, you know.
Yeah.
But the thing about crossbows is it opens up the whole possibility of shooting out of a field blind.
Right.
You know, you're sitting on your stool in a field blind, and Bambi walks up, or Bambi's father, preferably, and you can take a shot sitting right on your, what do you call it? But there's a whole other bunch of intricacies that are involved. If you don't take a shot, some crossbows have a method of decocking.
Mm-hmm.
Some crossbows, you just carry a dummy bolt and just dump it into the ground. So it's different.
It is.
It's different. I'll make you laugh. If you looked at my quiver for my recurve, I think it holds five arrows or four arrows. Well, anyway, there's one dum-dum, you know, it's the big rubber broadhead.
Yep.
You know, for shooting small game and stuff like that. There's one dum-dum in there. And it's not for small game. We used to have a real issue with bears.
Oh.
Bears. You'd be deer hunting, and the bears will come into your corn. A bear will come into your corn.
So if you shot them with that, they'd just run off?
Oh, you shoot them in the ass. You don't want to hit them anywhere near the, you know, from the front leg forward, because you can hurt them. But you pop them in the ass with that dumb, you know. I mean, listen, you're talking like a couple of 300 feet per second, you know, 275. And
I've never encountered a bear. I don't know what I would do.
I'm going to tell you something. Them. They're intriguing. Intriguing.
I'm
they
sure.
really are. They. I mean, I used to have them come in my yard all the time, and I'd have a sow come in with three or four cubs.
Oh gosh.
They used to have one or two cubs. Now they have three or four cubs because there's no predators.
Hmm.
And they're so healthy, and they, I guess they do the Yellowstone Park picnic basket thing. But anyway, I'd learned one thing it was like the lesson of my life. If you have bears and the cubs climb the tree, just don't go out that door anymore. Just don't go out in the yard. You're done. You're done. For the next half hour, you will not have access to your yard, your backyard. That's it. That's it. Because what happens is if they're coming down the tree and you go out there and spook them, they go back up the tree. And then the 20-minute clock starts all over again. So they could be up there for 18 minutes and start coming down the tree. If you go out there, they get scared, they go up the tree, and the 20-minute clock starts. And that mama, she will, and these are black bears. I mean, you know, it's supposedly docile, relatively docile animal. They give you this jaw clicking thing where they'll actually try and intimidate you. They'll just keep clicking their jaws, clop, 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 clop. And,
yeah, I'm intimidated.
Yeah, no. I'm going to tell you something. I've walked in the woods on a fire trail, and they've walked parallel with me, and that's great. That's great because as quiet as you are, it gives the rest of the game in the woods a sense of security. If they see another big animal around, like, you know, I mean, it's like. If a bear, how long does it take the woods to get quiet? This is the rhetorical question, all right? You make noise, you cough. I smoked cigarettes for years, so I'd be sitting in the woods and I'd cough. How long does it take the woods to get quiet? Well, I don't know. But after I've coughed or sneezed or made some kind of dopey noise, I've had deer come in within 5 minutes after that. So how long does it take the woods to get quiet? But on the other hand, if you got a bear and the bear is spooked and it runs or anything like that, or any kind of animal runs or spooks, well, the rest of the animals, you know, they're aware of that and you're not going to see them either. I used to have a real good spot, overlooked pond, and you can set your watch by the deer that used to come in. Every night, 4:30. It don't get dark till 6 o'clock.
You know? They say there's bears here, but I've never seen them, and I don't want to.
Yeah, they won't bother you.
My husband used to walk me into the stand and come get me when it was time to get out the deer stand. He hated it, but I said, "All right, I'll start walking myself in and out." But it was hear stories about bears. Black panthers, mountain lions, those kind of things.
Have you, all right, which brings up, oh, this is a whole nother, all right, we've been on for over half an hour. Let's pick up on this in the next episode. I really want you to tell me about this black panther lore that we have down here in the Lowcountry. I think we're going to wrap it up this one, and we're going to put another one episode together after this. And this is Frank on Target, and we're on WVFF Red Brick Patriot Radio, and that's 97.7 FM. And Angie, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
All right. And goodbye, Angie, and we'll talk again.
We here at WVFF thank you for tuning in to Frank on Target, your source for straight talk on global politics and outdoor escapades and controversy. Until next time, stay on target with Frank. You're listening to Veterans for Freedom Radio 96.